Okay. Actually, fortunately, we didn't have an altogether blank sheet because those of us who were initially appointed, we created the commission in such a way that there would be representation from both the National Federation of the Blind and the American Council of the Blind. We know that a lot of times governors appoint what it could be cronies or somebody who did a favor to somebody else or whatever. And we know that that can happen. And so when we were figuring out what kind of a commission we wanted, we made sure that the National Federation of the Blind and the American Council of the Blind would be able to choose a designee on the board. We also chose to have the board be comprised of five people. There are some commissions for the blind. The boards are three. And, if somebody is not there on a given day or whatever, that can be a problem. And so we felt like five would be a good number. And at the time that we were working on, I think it was 1996, where they created this Partnership Act, which was not a kind of partnership we wanted to be involved with, because again, they said that when they were doing consolidations, that they would not take away some of the key people in agencies that they sucked into one thing or another, which ultimately, as Robert said, ended up being the Health and Human Services. But they did do that, and one of the positions they sucked away was the accounting department, so that at the point at which we got the commission created, there was quite a bit of money that nobody could ever account for, specifically that should have been earmarked for blind people. And that's one of the reasons that when people start talking about, well, it would be much more efficient. They talk about economy of scale, where if you put a whole bunch of things or whatever together, then you can have things be less expensive and that sort of thing. And for some things like commodities or paper towels or something like that, that could be a good idea. But that doesn't work well for people. And so we always want to make sure that everybody who works for the Commission for the Blind is only working for the Commission for the Blind and not, a part of some other entity. So there were a lot of decisions that needed to be made, and Christine Boone and Michael Floyd and a lot of other people were very involved in the nuts and bolts of that process, and we tried to get it to happen under the Ben Nelson's administration, but he really didn't understand what we were looking for, and we just couldn't get him convinced. Even though some people went to the Capitol and worked and went to the governor's mansion, stood outside and requested for him to come out and speak or listen. That didn't happen. Governor Mike Johanns did listen to what we were saying, and we were able to get it done at that point. And so when we started out, we were very mindful of the fact that whatever we started would change over the years, and it has. And that is necessary. One of the things we know is that something that works in one time doesn't work in another. The School for the Blind, for instance, that Robert was talking about, was created in 1875, shortly after Nebraska became a state, which was in 1867. And it has changed a lot of times and been under various entities. And we as blind adults need to always be mindful of what is going on there as well. It is currently about to change administrators. Sally Gittinger Schreiner is retiring at the end of June, I believe it is. And Tanya Armstrong will be the new administrator there. And one of the reasons we need to pay attention to that entity a lot is that the blind children who learn whatever they do learn there will become blind adults and will be doing what we're doing in, you know, after they get done being kids. And so everything that we work on, we need to be mindful of the other things that are going on at the time. And right now, with a lot of the things happening in our country where people are trying to figure it out all the time, we need to keep bearing in mind that, as Robert mentioned, everything can be fleeting. And anything that's established by governmental laws can be unestablished. And so we need to be sure that the kinds of things we're doing are moving blind people forward, are involving blind consumers. When we started out, something as necessary as making sure we hired a good director was foremost in our minds, because the commission board, while it does have that responsibility to hire or fire the director, it really doesn't have the responsibility to carry on a lot of the minutiae of how the thing will be run. But if there is a good partnership between the Board of Commissioners and the agency director and staff, then people will know what's going on. It is a good idea for folks to show up at meetings, to get to know staff people, to question things. If something is happening, like a given program is going on, and you think, well, boy, why in the world is this being a thing? Ask, find out. And one of the things that the consumer organizations can do that the government folks cannot in as free a manner is to go to the legislature and talk about why it is that the budget for the commission needs to be increased, or why the money needs to be tweaked some, or the state needs to think about covering a thing that hasn't been being covered. We've had in the last several years differences in how things were done for senior blind people, and senior blind people make up the biggest population of blind folks. But because the commission was established to deal mostly with jobs and getting people rehabilitated for employment, there was a big disparity between what was available for finding people jobs and what was available for the biggest population of blind people. And we worked on different partnerships through the Friends of the Commission and through conversations with people and working with the legislature. We have change some of that here in Nebraska so that there is more money for seniors. And what that translates into is that people can be seen more often, for instance, by a counselor. When there's a very little tiny bit of money, then one person can only see blind people sporadically and not for very long. And so there were cutoff times and you could only get this amount. Well, that didn't necessarily mean that the person was learning as much as needed to be. And so some of those things have been able to be changed. We have tried over the years to make sure that when things are done, that they really do parallel what is going on. For instance, technology has changed a lot, even since 2000. And the way that material is stored has changed. And a lot of things I discovered over the years, some of the initial minutes and things that we had done and approved, when they got moved from one, I don't know, computer to another or something, I think maybe some of the drafts got moved over and not the final copies. And so I encourage you, even though you have a lot of that stuff done by staff people at the agency, I encourage you to check the final product that goes out onto the website. Because it's easy for, without somebody even meaning to end up having having drafts, for instance, go over instead of, you know, the final version of things. And it is your job to be in charge of how those things happen and whether they do. And so it is good that we have a conscientious staff at the Commission for the Blind. I think we have from its inception, but there are a lot more things that folks are doing than keeping track of what version of minutes gets, you know, kept in the archives and where are the archives and all of that kind of thing. But I encourage you to, in order to make sure that history doesn't get too far off of reality, that you do make sure that decisions that you make and that the documents that you create have that they are preserved in a way that is how you want it to happen. So I don't know if that's useful or not. When we first started out, Bill Arrester was the representative from the designee from the American Council of the Blind. I was the designee from the National Federation of the Blind. And we also had Maya Sams, Bob Burns, and oh my goodness, I'm drawing a blank. Excuse me?
I thought that was five already. Maya there, Sams, Bob Burns. Oh, yeah.
Bill?
Was this somebody from North Platte or Western Nebraska?
I think so. This is really bad. I no.
Was it Kip Swakowski or
no?
I think she.
Oh, Chad Bell, maybe?
She was there only for 2 years and then resigned.
Dorothy Westenyaki. Was the fifth person.
I know I read it.
Wow. I'm sorry, guys. I just can't believe I did that. But anyway.
Dorothy came afterwards, though.
Excuse me?
She came after. She wasn't one of the original.
Dorothy was, yes. Maya moved to Washington, D.C., got a job there, and moved away. And then there was a succession of people. Somebody, let's see, Ferreira, what was her first name? I don't remember.
Michelle
Ferreira. Yes, she came on, replaced Maya Sams. And then, you know, there have been several people throughout the time, and I think several have been mentioned, but after... you know, Jim Yurok, I think, yeah, he said that he was the second representative of the ACB. And we had, for the Federation, Wes Majerus and Carol Jenkins and Mike, Nancy Altman.
Billy Johnson.
Excuse me?
There's Julie Wallace. Johnson.
Daryl Walla at some point. Yeah.
He was not the, yeah, Daryl Walla and Julie Johnson were not NFB designees, but they were on the board. And Mike Hansen was a Federation designee, and now Kimberly Sherbarth is our current designee. And I hope we haven't forgotten anybody who served in any capacity, because it really does, everybody who comes, Becky Reakin,
yeah,
was on the commission board as well, and she is a teacher of visually impaired and blind kids, and that was another, it was a good type of representation to have, because she's working with those folks who are going to be the blind adults of the future. So it's always good when we can reach out and include folks like that as well.
Very good. Yeah, thank you. Barbara, I know when I first started coming to the meetings, you were the chair, and I think I was always, you did such a good job that it kept me wanting to come back, because you were very organized and thoughtful and inclusive. So, I just thought we're going to go into the icebreaker here, but history does matter. We've come a long ways, and I have no reason to think that we're going to continue to evolve. Like Barbara was talking about, just in the last couple of years, we were able to increase the senior blind budget by $500,000 a year. I remember when, and Carlos did a great job leading that. I never forget, right after Carlos became executive director, I invited him to the Omaha Association of the Blind meeting, and we have a number of older blind people, and Carlos said to me after the meeting, he wasn't sure if he was the menu item or the speaker for that day, because he got an earful from older blind people, and he took that to heart and worked with a lot of different state legislators and different the consumer groups, and I remember thinking, we're asking for $500,000. I don't know that we're going to get all that right away, but we asked for what we got, and that happened because we just had that when the blind go to the legislature, we show up and we let our voices be heard, and very compelling. There was so many great testimonies, and that it happened. Now we are basically our older blind budget went from like $211,000 to now it's over $700,000. So what a big difference. And those are all state funds, or I should say the $500,000. It's not federal funds, it's state funds. But yeah, that's just an example of what a commission, a state agency, and consumer groups can do when we all work together. And I guess my point is we truly are a consumer-driven state agency. I thought I would just real quickly read our mission statement, kind of the short abbreviated one. But the goal of the Commission for the Blind is to empower blind individuals, promote opportunities, and build beliefs in the blind. And if we're not doing that, if we're not helping blind people find jobs, if we're not show them blind people what they can do, and then being good role models and examples of blind people, then we're doing a disservice. And I think our state agency does a really good job, and it's because of those partnerships between the consumer groups and the role that the commission board plays, and most definitely the quality of staff that we have, and the mission that we're on. So historically, our state has always been very good competitively, if not one of the leaders in a number of areas. And the probably one that I think is most exciting is like very low recidivism, which means once people are trained and once they leave like the Center for the Blind or they get their jobs, they don't have to come back over and over again. You know, we train them how to do it right, and so that they can be independent. So we thought it'd be good to do just a icebreaker. So Kimberly, you want to kind of take over this part?
Sure. So I really liked the icebreaker that we had done at our last orientation, so we're going to go ahead and use that one. So what the icebreaker is, it's two truths and a lie. So if each of us could come up with two truths and a lie, then we'll give everyone an opportunity to kind of decide which one of those items is a lie. So I can go first just to give you an example. So here are my two truths and a lie. I'm a twin. My grandfathers have unique names. One's name is Flowers and the other's name is Emery. And I love liver. I could eat liver once a week. So we can go through and have people immediately guess, you know, which one is the lie, and then go on to the next person, if that's okay.
All right. I'm going to start. I just have a hard time thinking that anybody I know likes liver, so that's got to be a lie.
I like liver. Let's take a vote. I think we did that last time. So, commissioners, we can just take a quick vote. Who thinks that I don't like the liking liver is the lie?
I think that's a lie.
You are all right. I hate liver.
I would have been wrong.
Which one did you think it was, Linda?
I thought maybe it was that you were a twin.
I know, but I'm a twin.
Oh. But see, maybe it's because I like liver. I mean, I wouldn't eat it once a week, but I like it. Okay, I'm weird.
No, you're not weird. Do you want to go next, Linda?
Do I want to go next?
Yes.
Okay, I'll let's see. I have two brothers. Really like to read books about Christian stuff and anything that's, you know, interesting. And I'm having trouble here because I'm drunker. And my favorite thing to do is swim.
So what do we think? Which one is the lie?
Favorite activity is swimming.
That'd be the one I was going to pick. I think, you know, due to your Christian background, I could certainly understand you like to read Christian stuff.
I'm
going to
go with the swimming, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, guys are right.
All right.
All right. So should we have Cheryl go next?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that okay, Cheryl?
Sure, that's fine. Okay, let's see. Okay, I traveled throughout Europe. I graduated from the University of Nebraska, and I am a conservative.
Well, that's an interesting one.
I don't know. I don't know if you've traveled across Europe, but I'm going to go with that as your lie.
I'm going to guess that you're a conservative.
Anybody else? Have a guess? You want me to tell you?
Yeah.
I'm going to guess you're a conservative as a lie.
Okay. Well, Mark and Linda, you are right. Because I'm a liberal.
I was going to guess that, but I wasn't sure. Awesome. So where in Europe have you been?
When I was a young person in college, I took a camping trip throughout Central Europe. So I visited 13 countries in Central Europe.
Okay.
I don't know if I remember them all. England, France, Holland, Germany, Switzerland, Austria, Italy, let's see, Andorra, Spain. I can't remember if that's all of them or not, but so I took a 30-day trip through Europe, and we did a camping trip, camping and bus trip throughout Europe when I was in college back in 1975, the first time.
Wow, awesome. All right, Mark, are you ready?
Yeah, I'll say my first one is my wife and I have been foster parents for over 80 kids. Number two is my grandfather was a professional football player for the Chicago Bears back when George Halas was playing. And three, I have a brother that played soccer professionally for a number of years.
All right, what does everybody think?
I'm going to say the brother who played soccer.
I'm torn. 80 kids, foster parent to 80 kids. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the one I'm thinking.
That's a lot. Idea. That's a high number. That's amazing if that is the truth. I love it. But I'm going to vote for that one.
All right, well, my wife and I did foster care for a number of years, and we specialized kind of like in emergency placement, so we had a lot of kids come through our house, from anywhere from a couple of days to, a number of months, so that one's true. My grandfather did play professional football back in the days where they didn't wear helmets, and they weren't paid a whole lot of money, but he did that. He was back then only like the people that were well-to-do could do play professional like football. So, and then the third one is a lie. I don't have a brother that played professional soccer.
Awesome. All right, so. Did we get everyone? I think we did. So I guess that is our icebreaker.
All right. Well, thank you. That was interesting. Very interesting. Thank you, Kimberly. I thought next, Kimberly, just to hit different things. I wanted to talk about budgets and, being understanding the financials for the as a commissioner on the commission board. And,
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Could we take a very short potty break?
Absolutely. We'll see you back in five.
Okay.
Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
5 minutes, huh?